Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. The articles I'll be reading today were published in November of 2024 by the Geographic Society. So I hope you enjoy the program today. I'll begin with this article titled, "We Sent a Message to Aliens 50 Years Ago. This is What We Said." In 1974, astronomers sent a call out into the cosmos from a massive telescope in Puerto Rico. The anniversary of the message brings reflections on a new missive to the stars and grief for a lost observatory. It's written by Paola Rosa Aquino. Half a century ago, humans beamed a set of ones and zeros from our own tiny blue marble to a faraway group of stars, like a message in a bottle tossed into the cosmic ocean. The code marked humanity's first intentional interstellar transmission, a long-distance call intended for an alien audience. Using a massive radio telescope at the Arecibo Observatory, nestled in the foothills of Puerto Rico, astronomers beamed the message in the direction of a huge group of stars called Messier 13, some 25,000 light-years away from Earth. Broadcast on November 16, 1974, the so-called Arecibo message was the brainchild of Frank Drake, a legendary astronomer known for the eponymous Drake equation, which estimated the probability of life beyond Earth, with input from famous science communicator Carl Sagan. It was the first message sent to space, and it was beamed out from the most powerful instrument at the time, says Abel Mendez, a planetary astrobiologist and director of the Planetary Habitability Laboratory at the University of Puerto Rico at Arecibo. For Mendez and others, the transmission's legacy lives on as they try to determine where the message is today and devise new interstellar communications. A giant ear listening to the heavens. After 3 years of construction, the Arecibo Observatory opened its doors in 1963. For decades, it was the most sensitive radio telescope in the world. The gigantic bowl-shaped radio dish, which was built in a natural sinkhole and included a 900-ton steel platform suspended above it, stood out starkly among verdant Puerto Rican mountains. In 1974, newly installed equipment made the radio telescope capable of transmitting signals with 20 times the combined power of all power plants on Earth at the time. The Arecibo message largely served a symbolic purpose to celebrate the telescope's new ability to peer farther into space than ever before. To craft the transmission, Drake enlisted the help of Cornell University graduate students. Drake started creating the message. Richard Isaacman, then a Cornell graduate student and now a consultant for NASA contractors, says, "He showed me what he had so far, which was fairly close to the finished product." The project would announce humanity's existence in the cosmos, so Drake used a binary format, the most basic computer code, to convey some Earth essentials. Our system of counting numbers, the double helix structure of DNA, where we can be found in a blocky depiction of the solar system, as well as simple drawings of a human figure and the observatory that sent the message. Isaacman suggested making the third planet from the sun stand out from the other worlds in the solar system to indicate to any potential alien pen pals that it was the inhabited one. The final message was broadcast for about 3 minutes at a frequency of 2380 megahertz and contained 1679 bits of data arranged in a grid measuring 73 rows by 23 columns. No red receipts. The odds of a response were minuscule, but the transmission's impact on astronomers was huge. This attempt has opened our minds greatly to the possibilities of interstellar communication, says Mendez. It raised questions like, can other life forms understand us? If we're capable of searching for signals, are other civilizations doing the same? After that fateful November day in the lush mountains of Arecibo, Puerto Rico, the cosmic communique was never repeated. Given the cluster's distance, you can expect a reply in about 50,000 years. Astronomers aren't holding their breath. More legitimate efforts to communicate with off-planet pen pals will require sending the message more than once, or to more than one spot in the sky, notes Mendez. Rather than expecting a reply, the message was sent to prove we could reach out to the universe, on the off chance that an intelligent civilization has the equipment to listen to our call. Still, the prospect of contacting life from another planet forced astronomers to consider the challenges that such an extraordinary cultural exchange would bring. The risks of phoning E.T. After Arecibo transmitted the message, scientists expressed concern that it had been sent out into deep space without broad consultation. If one were to try and create such a message today, one would certainly want to take a much more inclusive intellectual approach instead at the time. Basically, 90% of that message was created by a 44-year-old white guy working on his own, Frank Drake, Isaacman says. I think if you were to go about it in a more culturally and intellectually honest way, you would want to have a much wider range of cultural and cognitive inputs than that. Others warned against actively shouting out toward the cosmos, suggesting we might pose a risk to humanity by attracting the attention of less than friendly aliens. Works of science fiction like Csikszentmihalyi's literary trilogy-turned-Netflix show Three Body Problem also consider the possibility that broadcasting our location to alien civilization puts a target on our back. In it, characters discuss the dark forest theory, a speculative hypothesis where alien civilizations are like prey hiding in an ever-threatening forest. They resist the urge to blab to others out of fear of hostile interstellar neighbors. Groups like the SETI Institute have since proposed international protocols for transmitting such messages. Intentionally signaling other civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy raises concerns from all the people of Earth about both the message and the consequences of contact, a group of influential scientists said in a 2015 statement. A worldwide scientific, political, and humanitarian discussion must occur before any message is sent. Mendez points out, though some experts think it may be foolhardy to alert eavesdropping aliens in our presence of our presence. A single radio transmission will also be competing with all the TV and radio signals we're constantly emitting from Earth. The last Arecibo message. In the 5 decades since Arecibo first beamed the message into space, Our understanding of how to find life beyond Earth has greatly changed. Astronomers discovered the first planet beyond our solar system in 1992, and since then they've found over 5,000 more exoplanets. Rocky water worlds abound. Up to 29 could be in their star's habitable zone, meaning the region around stars where liquid water, and hence life, could exist on the surface of planets, according to Habitable Worlds Catalog. In this new era in the hunt for alien life, Arecibo Observatory researchers launched a competition in 2018 to compose an updated message. This time, a new generation of scientists had the tantalizing, yet daunting task of summing up humanity to an extraterrestrial audience. A team of then-undergraduate students from the University of Puerto Rico won the contest and took cues from the original message, using the same binary digit system and a similar schematic of the solar system as they drafted a new one. "We were inspired by the original," says team member Kelby Palencia-Torres of Tau Alta. To expand on the previous communication, the team also included a map that pinpoints the location of Earth within the Milky Way galaxy and highlights some of the interesting cosmic objects in our solar system, such as Saturn's rings and our lunar companion. Of course, they updated the solar system to exclude Pluto from the planets depicted. The proposed transmission also features physical constants like Planck's constant and the speed of light, as well as basic mathematical operators. The original message included information about DNA and amino acids, which some argue could be sensitive information to disclose to potentially predatory aliens. This time around, the team kept information about humans at a minimum, only including a visual representation of humans with average height and the world's population. It was very interesting what has to be accomplished so that a message not only reaches the chosen destination, but also how to make the message sufficiently simple, communicate exactly what we want, and how to make sure that it is not misinterpreted, says team leader Cesar Quinones Martinez of San Sebastian. Liz Mario Mateo Ribeiro from Ponce, Puerto Rico, chose the message's destination, Tea Gardens Star, a tiny old star only 12 light years away from our sun that has two potentially life-friendly worlds. "It's relatively close compared to other systems," Mateo Ribeiro says. "If aliens there decoded the message and responded promptly, we'd only wait 25 years for their reply." Fall of an Icon, the last Arecibo message, or the message that was never sent, as the team calls it, won't be broadcast in the foreseeable future. The Arecibo Observatory collapsed in 2020 due to decay and damage from Hurricane Maria and halted transmission plans. The National Science Foundation, which supported the site, deemed the observatory too precarious to repair. The site may never collect radio data from its giant dish, but there are plans to keep the location as a STEM-focused educational center. Scientists around the world, and especially Puerto Rican astronomers, mourned the loss of the astronomical workhorse. When the observatory fell, one of the pillars of Puerto Rico's science fell, Palencia Torres says. Like thousands of other local schoolchildren, the team members visited the observatory on field trips, which stirred their interest in science. Arecibo was one of the only earthbound instruments capable of not just listening to the whispers of faraway stars' radio signals, but sending these signals out with enough power to reach the far reaches of the cosmos. NASA's International Array of Giant Radio Antennas may be the group's best bet. So far, there are no set plans to beam the new message or future signals. But the team is summarizing their work in a paper posted on arxiv.org this week. To the last Arecibo message team, there's comfort in the fact that the original communication is still en route to its target, proving that the observatory's cosmic legacy will live on long after its physical demise. "We're still trying to communicate with faraway beings," Palencia Torres adds. "We're trying to answer the age-old question, are we alone?" Considering the apparent motion of celestial objects over time and the concentrated swath of sky where the original message was sent, Mendez and his colleagues estimate that a minimum of 4 stars will receive the signal within the first 500 years of the message's transmission. He says, Gaia, DR3-132-805-794-00895-89376, a star 395 light-years away, will be the first star to receive the message. This means our U-up message to intelligent life elsewhere in the cosmos has about 345 years to go to reach our world, our would-be cosmic neighbors. That ends the article. The title was, "We Sent a Message to Aliens 50 Years Ago. This is What We Said," by Paola Rosa Aquino. The second article today is titled, "The World's First Saber-Toothed Cat Mummy Has Been Found in Siberia." This remarkably well-preserved cub could help scientists answer questions about saber-tooth anatomy, hunting, and even coat color. By Riley Black. For nearly 2 centuries, paleontologists have wondered what saber-toothed cats really looked like. Despite models in museums, dramatic paleo art, and even a starring spot in the Ice Age movies, the appearance of these long-fanged predators has been a mystery. All experts have really had to go on are fossilized bones and the occasional footprint. Now a frozen cub found in the Siberian permafrost has provided the world with a glimpse of a saber tooth that roamed across the northern hemisphere about 32,000 years ago. "I was over the moon excited to see such an incredible specimen," says Ashley Reynolds, a paleontologist at the Canadian Museum of Nature, which was not involved in the new research. Even though mummified mammoths and other herbivores have been found in the same region of Russia, apex predators are rare compared to their prey. "The discovery of a saber-toothed mummy always seemed a slim chance, as prey tend to outnumber predators in the wild." In 2020, the frozen, mummified carcass was found by diggers prospecting for mammoth tusks, says paleontologist A.V. Lopatin of the Russian Academy of Sciences. Lopatin and his colleagues were surprised and delighted to study the specimen, which they described November 14th in Scientific Reports. The frozen cub not only provides the first look at what a saber-toothed cat looked like in real life, Reynolds notes, but also represents a life stage that paleontologists know less about, as most fossils are from adult animals. Seeing a saber-tooth fur real. Lopatin and his co-authors identified the cub as a baby Homotherium latendens, the carnivore sometimes called a scimitar-toothed cat for its shorter, serrated canine teeth, compared to the dirk-toothed Smilodon, was a lanky and wide-ranging predator that was better suited to running after prey than the ambush techniques used by the famous Smilodon. Found in both Eurasia and North America, the cat hunted juvenile mammoths and other megafauna. Fossil sites such as Friesenhahn Cave in Texas indicate that the felines sometimes made dens in caves to raise their cubs. Without fossils that preserve soft tissue like fur, muscle, and skin, paleontologists have debated what Homotherium would have looked like. For example, illustrators have often depicted saber-tooths with the tips of their canines sticking out below their muzzles, which may have been true for some species like Smilodon. But a 2022 analysis suggested that Homotherium had deep muzzles where the cat's sabers were concealed weapons covered by the upper lip when the mouth was closed. Even with the mummy, the question of whether Homotherium adults had covered fangs is challenging. Lopatin notes that the upper lip of the cub is more than twice as deep as that of a modern lion cub, further hinting that Homotherium had lips capable of concealing the long canine teeth that they would later grow. Reynolds cautions, however, that the cub did not have its adult teeth yet. Only a mummy of an adult Homotherium can settle that debate. The saber kitten suggests that an adult Homotherium mummy could be awaiting discovery as well. In other respects, the cub's anatomy confirms what paleontologists expected from bones. The cub had the enlarged neck muscles thought to occur in adults, and also had long, muscular forelimbs seen in adult Homotherium, says Margaret Lewis, a paleontologist at Stockton University in New Jersey, who was not involved in the new study. The juvenile's jaw was also capable of wide gapes that adult Homotherium used to bite into prey, she notes. The ancient cat's coloration is another long-standing question. Modern cat coat colors tend to be associated with their hunting environment. Lions, cougars, and cats that live in open, grassy habitats often have light and relatively uniform coats. Given that Homotherium prowled the chilly mammoth steppe with few trees but lots of grasses, it seemed likely that the cat would also have a coat suited to blending into the wide open spaces. The uniform dark brown color of the mummy fur turned out to be completely unexpected, Lopatin says. Much like a set of cave lion cubs found in the permafrost several years ago, Lopatin notes, Homotherium cubs were likely born with a darker coat color, which lightened as the cats grew up. It's fascinating that there doesn't seem to be any spotting or striping on the cubs, Reynolds says, as such patterns are common among modern cats, even in species that have more uniform coats as adults. Lewis notes that frozen animals often have a reddish tint, so the cub's current coat might not reflect their color in life. Genetic analyses of the fur could help clarify what colors Homotherium really were. Sabretooths versus modern cats. Experts will surely keep examining the cub for some time to come. It is the first example of an Ice Age mummy for a mammal species that has no modern equivalent for comparison. Sabretooths specialized in hunting mammoths and other megafauna and perished when their giant-sized prey vanished due to a combination of climate change and human activity. No living cats hunt the way they did, so the fossil soft tissue adds a great deal of detail where paleontologists could only be guessing from bones before. Even the cub's tiny feet are providing new insights. The paw pads for each toe are much rounder than those of a lion, Reynolds notes, and the cub lacks a distinctive carpal pad that sits higher up on the leg in modern cats. The reason why is unclear, but investigating the contrast might help experts better discern how sabretooths differ from today's big cats. Homotherium and its relatives were not just lions with long fangs, but predators that evolved in a very different world, inhabited by an array of strange giants. The frozen cub offers a tangible connection to that time when sabretooths stalked the plains. And that completes the article. That also completes the broadcast for today. We've run out of time. This has been the National Geographic Program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader today. I hope you enjoyed the program. The articles were published in November of 2024 by the Geographic Society. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to the premium programming offered by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed a program and would like to hear it, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast info and audio, then click on demand. You'll see a list of programs available to you. Hopefully you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.